Last fall, Corrections Secretary John Litcher asked for more mental health programs for the 22,700 inmates in Wisconsin prisons. Governor Scott Walker agreed with many of those requests, folding them into his 2017-2019 state budget. To discuss these new mental health resources and the governor's proposed corrections budget, thanks to Corrections Secretary John Litcher, welcome back.
Thank you, Steve. It's good to be here. It's good to be with you.
Thank you. I really appreciate you coming in. Yeah. Give us a overview of the mental health issues that corrections faces. I've seen some stats nationally, but what I know there's different gradients. Some of your inmates have chronic mental health issues, others have less so, but overall, 22,700 inmates, best estimate on number with some mental health issues?
We have approximately, I believe it's 7% of our male population has a serious mental health need. And approximately, I believe it's 12% of our female population has a serious mental health need. If you take a look at the total numbers, if fires identification, there's certainly a greater number of women offenders that have both what I would call lower level need, mm-hmm. than the males. But the fact of the matter is that more offenders are coming in with mental health needs and identified mental health needs, and you have to deal with that. I believe that there is approximately between 7,000 to 8,000 men that have total mental health needs, and there's approximately 1,200 women in our system that have some kind of mental health need in regard to services that are going to have to be rendered in the institutions themselves. And so, yes, it is a challenge. And we're very appreciative of the governor because in some of the issues that we'll be speaking to just very quickly, he has also recognized this. We put forth ideas and suggestions and also issue papers to deal with this. And he's accepted them, and we look forward to implementing them both in the male side, but also because the female side already has appropriate services with what's called the 10-10 model, mm-hmm. and that 10-10 model was put in some time ago. So we are better able to deal with the women issues than we are the men, and most of our services that are in this budget deal with the male population.
Well, but what percentage of the inmate population is male? Isn't it?
It's vast. It's vastly higher. I mean, of the
70 or 80 percent or something.
Yeah, it's probably higher than that. There's about 10%. I would say there's 22,000. I believe it's 1,800 females.
Okay.
So out of the 22,000, 1,800 females.
Yeah. Thanks.
So yes, we're predominantly a male side institutions.
Well, as you prepared your budget proposal, which you forwarded to the governor last fall, what did you learn about additional needs for mental health programming that prompted you to include a recommendation to spend so much more money on these problems?
Well, we know that if we can deal with the mental health needs of our offender base, whether it's male or female, a lot of issues become to be smaller, i.e., you don't use near as much restrictive housing, simply because you're dealing with the needs and you don't have the reactive activity that the mental health issue will promote. You also know that if you deal with a mental health need, you also reduce and hopefully reduce dramatically the amount of negative interaction between an offender and an officer, such that there could be a potential attack or some kind of reaction to an order or a demand or an issue. So if you deal with the mental health issues, you're making institutions safer. You're making the programs more effective because they're able to absorb the program, and you minimize the use of restrictive housing, restraints, the use of OC to reduce, to quell disturbance, whatever that, as minor as that may be. The fact of the matter is by dealing with the issue that predominates possibly some of the causes and effects, you're making your institution safer and much more effective.
This is your second stint as Corrections Secretary, so let me ask you an overview question. Why is it that the inmate population with mental health issues is so much higher than those people on Wisconsin streets? Why so much higher?
Well, I think basically, some of the reaction of our offenders on the street has been dealt with by the fact is in their own minds, they had no alternatives because something drove them to that. I honestly believe the mental health issues that possibly drove a person to crime or react to the way he or she did as far as in a type of environment or type in a situation, that precipitated or helped cause whatever crime it was, whether it was an acting out as an aggressive nature to a neighbor or possibly in securing funds to do something that they thought they had to do, so it was robbery, mm-hmm. or some type of assaultive behavior. I do think that the mental state of mind of an individual is part of that. And so as a result, and now and it certainly isn't all of that, because we know that still the majority of our offenders come in and don't have a mental health illness. But the simple fact of the matter is I think you see that it can be as part of a force that has precipitated some type of the crime action. Now, when they come to us, we have an obligation to treat that so that by the fact that they're coming into a closed setting like an institution, that it doesn't disintegrate more. We do not want mental health to disintegrate more.
That was my next question. When you say you have an obligation to treat, is the goal, it can't be treat to heal, correct? Is the goal treat that person doesn't spiral downward further with mental health problems?
Well, I would hope that the professionals that we have, whether those are psychiatrists, psychologists, treatment specialists, whatever group you want to put it, social work's doing with treatment groups, whatever the situation may be, that they're able to both have a stabilization of that offender once he or she comes in, but then hopefully to treat it such that they do get better. I don't know if you can say completely eliminate it, but certainly their efforts do make our offenders better individuals in dealing and coping with some of their own problems. Coming into a cloistered setting like a prison is in fact challenging to people with, should we say, both serious and lower level mental health issues. So you have to deal with that so that they can deal with the environment that they're in. And I think that that's what our programs do. But yes, it is to try and heal these individuals. Do you completely heal someone with a mental health challenge? I don't know that. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. I don't know what they say is complete healing. I just know we have an obligation to deal with those illnesses such that they are able to adapt personally and also adapt within the prison setting in a safer and more effective manner to deal with the issues that they come with.
The average cost of caring for an adult male prison inmate is now up to more than $32,000 a year. Does that sound right?
Yeah, there's
Mr.
an
Secretary?
Average. If you'd average men and women, it's about $32,000. For maximum secure, it's approximately $35,000. It goes down a little bit in the mediums, and then it goes up again in the minimums because of economy of scale. Now, on the woman side of the ledger, it is a higher cost simply because we do have more mental and medical health services at Tichita, and then follow our women's population to their centers.
Have you ever thought about, let's take the $32,000 average cost of an adult inmate, how much dealing with mental health issues might be a part of that $32,000? You ever thought about that?
Well, we've never done a cost analysis on that, to be honest with you. I guess what I would say as a general statement is when an offender is sent to us by the courts and by society that they said that they have to do a prison term, we have an obligation to first of all identify what needs they have, and we have an obligation to treat them, whether that's a mental health or an anger management or a sex offender treatment, whatever the case may be. We have that obligation. As I state wherever I go, we are called the Department of Corrections for a reason. It's just not the Department of Discipline. We have an obligation by society, given to us as a charge, and also given to us as a charge by our governor, to deal with an inmate base and to improve their status in life, such that when they walk out, they kind of walk out with the opportunity to have a meaningful job, stable employment, stable housing, positive interactions with the societal group they're living with, their families, their siblings or children, whatever the case may be. We have an obligation to try to meet that goal.
These prisons are tough settings. I don't have to tell you that. Do you envision, even though there's more money in the budget for mental health programs, do you envision trouble hiring psychologists? and social workers with mental health skills to meet these additional needs that you've identified?
Well, certainly we'll have challenges in hiring, but we've been fairly successful in either securing these type of professional individuals or contracting with these set of professional individuals to provide that service. Part of one of the initiatives that in respect to, for example, on the juvenile side, mm-hmm. we'll be hiring additional psychiatric time, but that additional psychiatric time we know is going to be by contract. So when we go to our contracted partners, we feel that we're going to be able to not only hire, we'll do as much hiring as we possibly can to get those type of treatment individuals, psychologists, associates, full-time psychologists, licensed psychologists, treatment social workers, treatment specialists, or else we will go to a contracted model. But that is not our desire. Our desire is to hire them in and become DOC employees because we have more stability, less turnover, more continuity of program, and that's all important dealing with this population.
Now let's look at four specific upgrades at four specific prisons and facilities in DOC. So let's start with the governor's budget recommends $2.23 million more for treatment and diversion unit at Oshkosh. Just talk about Oshkosh.
Well, Oshkosh is important because with Oshkosh, it allows the other initiatives that you're going to be mentioned to take place too. The special treatment unit and the diversion unit is there for some of our, what we call MH2 classification inmates, which is our more serious offenders.
Yes.
And they will be transferred to Oshkosh to deal with those, their specific needs. Those additional staff that's in this diversion unit, and I believe there's approximately 57 beds for the MH2s and 11 diversion beds, and I think that it comes there's approximately 70 beds in that diversion unit at Oshkosh.
Okay,
and they are going to be used by all institutions, such that we reduce those populations at that institution, intensify the treatment programs there, and better deal with their needs. That diversion unit, well, actually, it's the special treatment unit. The diversion unit is also, it's a combination, but that special treatment unit is critical to the entire system because we will be evaluating an offender to be able to quickly go to Oshkosh for the treatment purposes, which gives all the other institutions an ability to cope better than with the populations they have left. So that is a foundation program, that treatment, special treatment unit. That's why there is as much earmarked for that, plus there's as much individuals with professional training. I believe there's five psychology associates. There's one full-time psychologist. There's a number of treatment specialists there, plus correctional officers to manage the security of that unit. We know that that will make a dramatic difference in all of our restrictive housing units. We know that that treatment will do a dramatic difference in the type of physical interactions, negative physical interactions against officers and other personnel within inside our correctional institution. And that is a critical factor in the basis of integrating all the other types of programs that you're going to talk about, other than maybe the juvenile mental health unit for Copper Lakes.
Then, okay, so the upgrade in Oshkosh is going to have benefits throughout the entire correction system.
Absolutely. Okay. And that's critical to have because that is a major commitment. And that major commitment, even though Oshkosh is our largest institution of numbers, the fact is dealing with our most challenging mental health offenders, that will be a benefit to every institution where those offenders come from, other than possibly, say, like Prairie du Chien, which doesn't have any. Okay. As some people.
A second upgrade in the governor's budget, $773,200 for the Columbia Health Services Unit. Now, there's a footnote in the governor's budget. Columbia has a exceptionally high number of inmates with mental health problems.
Well, Columbia was built with the concept that this was going to be a special maximum institution for those with mental health challenges.
I see.
It was built with that philosophy and concept in mind when it was opened. I mean, that was always the situation. And they had special management units at Columbia that other institutions weren't staffed or handled. And there was supposed to be a diversion from program movement out of Dodge. If you had a mental health need, you would go to Columbia. However, simple fact that the numbers continue to escalate beyond the populational abilities to handle all those offenders. So you still have, we still have mental health inmates at all of our maximum secure institutions. But yes, Columbia's expansion of their health service unit is to be able to deal with, first of all, the medical needs, but also the mental health medical needs. It's sort of like a diversion, not a diversion, but a dual diagnosis concept, that some of their medical health needs is also a result of some of the issues they're dealing with on their mental health. So that is going to be a combination to give them a 24/7 from where they currently are, a 24/7 situation to deal with emergencies, mental health calls, medical help calls, but on the medical side, because it is not now a 24/7 operation. It will move to a 24/7 operation. And most of the staff there are going to be medical staff, RNs, practical RNs, and nurse practitioners that will be able to deliver these services. But we know if we deal with the medical needs, that will also help on the mental health side.
And then you have $592,600 for inmates in restrictive housing to get more mental health programming. John, of the 22,700 inmates, do we have a few hundred in restrictive housing or solitary confinement now? Do you know the population?
Well, we have approximately just over 1,000 individuals in restrictive housing totality in the total district. There, of those, of the most serious mental health issues, I believe there's approximately 120. So, I mean, I just looked at some of those numbers before I came over here. Now, that when I say 120, that's our most severe, not MH1s. That's MH2s and also MH2As, which is there are two different categories there. The fact of the matter is that we want to expand the services at restrictive housing. Mm-hmm. The number of we're dropping our restrictive housing use dramatically over, say, 2013-14 to the present. We went from over 1,300 offenders down to approximately just over 1,000 in restrictive housing.
Over about 3 years.
Over 3 years.
Okay.
We know that this program, where we'll be able to, we're trying to get to what's called a 10-10 concept. Basically what that means is even if you're in restricted housing, you get 10 hours of psychological mental health services plus 10 hours out of your cell for other types of non program services to give you just more time out of a cell confinement. And we're trying to deliver that service in our restrictive housing. These individuals will be delivering this service in restrictive housing and supplement and not supplant, but supplement and enhance the service that they would have been just received by the staff that were there. So with the governor putting this in the budget, it gives us a better opportunity to move those type of individuals out of restrictive housing quicker, with less issue once they get back to their step down and then eventually general population, and with the supportive services they need to be acclimated to the general population.
And the governor's budget also recommends $264,700 in the second year of the biennium, fiscal 2019, for body cameras for guards?
Right, that's in restrictive housing.
How many cameras, do you know?
That I could get to you, but I don't have the actual number of cameras.
Are there guards now that work with inmates in solitary confinement that have body cameras, and you're expanding that, or do they not have body cameras
we
now?
Did a pilot at Waupun with body cameras, and then that pilot went away. And so while there are body cameras for cell extractions and cell activities within restrictive housing, and also in general population if they have to do it, Everyone wears a body camera in restrictive housing or certainly in general population. These cameras give us a better ability to evaluate any type of interaction that happens between an offender and an officer. It also protects the officers to validate and verify what is happening, what was the exchange, what was said or not said, what was thrown or not thrown, what type of activity had happened. Because that's where we have some types of interaction that might not be considered positive. And some people challenge some of the incident reports that are wrote. Mm-hmm. A camera division plus the storage unit, and part of this is the storage of that video,
yes,
will be an asset to the officer. And also, it'll be part of the training tools. If something didn't work in part of that situation. It'll be part of the evaluation that we can change, and then part of that evaluation that we can make positive changes such that we have a better environment in our restrictive housings. But it's also put in there for a protection for the officer that validates and verifies what he or she said in relationship to the incident that occurred.
And the governor's budget also includes $556,600 for additional mental health programming at Copper Lake School for Juvenile Girls.
Right.
What's the extent of mental health programming at Copper Lakes now?
Well, we have, it's probably, as far as just raw numbers, it's probably we have our heaviest amount of both full-time psychologists and psychologist associates and interns, because we have an intern program there that are individuals leading to doctorate degrees mm-hmm. in to become licensed psychologists. As far as a ratio of student, and I say student there, not offender, because they are there for educational purposes. They're stayed there because they come with an offense, but they come there for educational purposes. It is a school. So that young adult, that individual, in respect to the ability for psychological services, are there. What we don't have is that continuation of third shift, and this is what this will do.
Okay.
This expands third shift coverage, both from a youth counselor, more youth counselors to interact with the youth when an issue may arise, but also one full-time psychologist associate devoted just to Copper Lakes and the individuals that are there. We have approximately half of our young ladies that are there that have some kind of mental health need, not all severe, but some kind of mental health need. This psychologist associate assigns specifically and only in addition to all the other services that are provided by the other staff, will provide a level of service that we feel will be instrumental in helping these individuals. What this does, this goes back to what we had when I was at Southern, in this position before, at Southern Oaks Girls School, which was the equivalent of Copper Lakes.
Yes.
We had a mental health unit because MJTC was for boys. We did not have any... we didn't have another a situation for girls. That is the same today. MJTC is still for boys, Mendota Juvenile Treatment Center, and we need that specialized treatment for our young ladies. That's what this program will do. We're very excited about this because we do feel this in itself is going to help many of those cope with their situation, give them better abilities to cope with whatever issues they may have. And because most of these young ladies are with us only between 9 and 15 months at the maximum, once they go back into their communities, they're better able to deal with their issues also.
Well, in the few minutes remaining, let's talk about the overall corrections budget as submitted by the governor. One thing that intrigued me, on page 134 of DOA's budget summary, it says this: the 2011 recidivism rate was 31.3% within the next 3 years. Is there any later number for that?
Yeah, the latest number is 32.6.
32.6.
Yeah,
and how does that compare to other state prison systems?
There really isn't a good comparison, and then basic for one reason. Everybody defines recidivism different.
Okay.
And we define our recidivism based upon our acid. There's two figures. There's recidivism and reincarceration. Reincarceration is for both a person coming out of prison having a revocation, or revocation with new crime, or new crime. Mm-hmm. That's higher. That's about 37.9. Recidivism is those that just come out of prison with a new crime. That would be a new crime to come back in. As a result, that's a lower ratio. 32.6, so we think it is our opinion. We don't have national data on this. Is that we think we're substantially lower than the national average.
Lower.
We're lower than the national average on that. If we compare everything,
doing better than the national average.
Doing better than the national average.
Okay.
Our goal is to continue to reduce that recidivism by what I would call both the programs we talked about, other programs that deal with alcohol and drug needs. Needs of anger management, domestic violence, sex offender treatment, education, vocational technical training, skill training for vocational skills, such that when they come back in through reentry, and they will have not only the skill components, but the personal components to deal with some of these issues, and we're hoping to drive that recidivism rate even lower. You'll never eliminate it completely, but I think you can drive it lower. And by programming and the programs that the governor's put in this budget, especially on skill training, job training for employment purposes, we think that we have a good basis for a future situation to reduce this number.
When I look at some of the numbers in terms of overcrowding in our prison system, it raises the question of remodeling or building new prisons. Now, the budget would authorize a long-term study of DOC's needs. Is that another way to say Wisconsin, if our inmate population continues to grow up, is going to need more prisons, John?
I think that what you're doing is you're going to evaluate two factors. You're going to evaluate the additional bed space, which you just identified, but you're going to also identify are the institutions we have the best locations based upon age, based upon program, based upon issues of security such as line of sight, housing units versus tier blocks. I mean, there's going to be a whole range of evaluations made because some of our institutions are old, as you know, quite old.
Well, Pond was built 1850s.
Yeah, and Green Bay, and there's other institutions that have needs of renovation and repair. But I think this is a total study. I don't think it's just in the area of are we going to need more prisons, because I don't think that that fact has been realized as of right now. Even though our prison population is slowly creeping larger, I think we have the time to do an evaluative study, and then that evaluative study will be forth. But it's not just to say it's a euphemism for building more prisons.
Well, if our inmate population now is 22,700, what do your experts say it's going to be at the end of the next biennium on June 2019?
Well, that was asked of me at the hearing the other day, and I said we will probably be over 23,000. We'll probably be around 23,200, 23,300.
Okay.
That's a speculative opinion based upon our projections out over a longer period of time. And those projections are fairly accurate. As I told that committee, we're running around a 99.8% accuracy rate in our projections versus intake. Intake is just a little lower than the projections. But, I mean, if you extrapolate that over the two-year biennium, you could be that high. Now, we have jail bed space in our county jails to help us with that. We'll look first to that, and then we'll have to look at other alternatives.
The biggest reason your inmates are there are, of course, violent acts.
Yeah, almost 67%.
67%. Because my next question is, what percentage is drug-related?
Drug-related is around that has a drug portion of it, not
component.
That's the only component, is approximately 27%.
What percentage of inmates are illiterate? They cannot read and write.
I asked that question because you had asked me that question. We don't have just a pure literacy rate, because when we do an evaluation, do they need academic pre-preparation to always get to the ultimate, which is HSAD, GED? A majority, and I think it's around 63-64% of our inmates come in with a high school graduation or better. Okay. And so as a result, that other 33-38% of those inmates, we evaluate their academic abilities and we place them in appropriate programs. Some will be dealing with basic skills, vocational training. Some will be dealing with actually getting a GED, HSED. And then after that, they'll be dealing with the skill improvement towards a skill that's sellable on the street.
Okay, two more quick questions. The staffing and guard shortages, has that improved since you came back to the agency?
Yes, we have dropped our overall staff shortages. After this class, we're graduating Friday. There's 99 new officers in that class. It'll drop down to approximately 8.8%. That is a difference. When I came in, it was over 12%.
Okay.
And so on gross numbers drop, it's probably about 27% lower than when I came in. But that is always a challenge for the department. We're going to have to be a challenge in recruiting, and we're going to have a challenge of retention. And we will continue to face that challenge, and we're meeting it on the recruiting side. We have to do, God will, a better job on the retention side.
And then the final question, Wisconsin has had a parole commission for decades. The governor's budget would abolish that, take from three full-time commissioners down to one person in your agency. Why does that make sense, sir?
Well, first of all, we only have approximately 3,000 inmates currently still eligible for parole under old law. I think one person with the supportive services that we're going to be giving to them in the Department of Corrections are able to deal with the cases on an expedited expeditious manner, still taking into concern both safety issues of the person and their crimes, victims' rights in relationship to those parolees, because victims' input is crucial as we deal with parole versus extended supervision, and the needs of that offender. Did they do their programming? Did they meet their training? Did they? What was their discipline reports with inside the institution? Have they tried to adapt to their setting? And I think one person is able to deal with the cases that come on a rotational basis, such that we can deal with it with no stopping of parole or leaving people to mandatory release. I mean, the fact is we'll be dealing with the parolees as adequately and equitably as we did in the past.
Okay, very good. We're out of time. Corrections Secretary John Litcher, thanks very much for coming in.
Steve, it's always a pleasure.
I noticed your proposed budget for fiscal 18, $1,127 million, still more than the UW system. That's just
well,
ironic.
We have also 10,100 employees also.
I understand. Secretary, thank you so much.
Very good.
Thank you.